Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Good morning, New York. This is AM 1230 WFAS. It's Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Bruce, I got you on the line now here.
Yeah, you do. I'm in Towson, Maryland.
Are you really?
I'm ready to feed about 20 kids that are going to play for me this afternoon at Calvert Hall High School. We got a doubleheader with the 2012 Cal Ripken Collegiate Baseball League champion Redbirds from Baltimore.
Yeah, very.
And, I found out, I mean, we've had so much rain, just to catch everybody up, we've had so much rain on the East Coast this week. It's just been a mess, and we actually should have already played three or four games by now. We haven't played one, so we had to double up today, and I'm over here, and, you know, I got to do what I do, so I'm going to kick you off here. I'm your first guest. Ask me any question you want, crying out loud. Hey,
yeah.
you got some good guests calling in. You got Rick Snyder calling in to talk about the Belmont yesterday.
Yeah.
And you and I were watching that race.
Yeah.
And it didn't end any way I expected, unfortunately. I knew Ord would be close, but that wasn't my winner. My winner was Revolutionary, and Revolutionary just didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Revolutionary looks like he was in slow motion to me. But that horse that won it, God, you know, you were talking about that horse before the race.
Mm-hmm.
That, I should have had that horse in the exacta.
Yeah, Palace Malice. Well, he was a huge underdog.
I loved him though.
I left him out.
I took Rosie.
Yeah, I mean, he was
Rosie.
The...
I took the mare.
Yeah, Rosie. Well, that was a good story, and she made horse racing history.
I took the mare.
All three.
To me. I took the filly. Horse racing people everywhere. You don't call a filly, a three-year-old filly, a mare. Well, one day she'll be a mare. With any luck.
Yeah.
What did your father-in-law think about the race?
Belmont, anytime there's a big Triple Crown stakes going on, you know, our family crowds around
the
TV.
Tell him what your father-in-law does. He's a racing guy.
Yeah, he's a trainer. He trains racehorses out of Pimlico, which is the home of the Preakness. So horse racing runs pretty deep in my family, and whenever a horse race goes on, we crowd around the TV. I mean, heck, for my wedding was a Kentucky Derby-themed wedding. We had horse betting at my wedding, so that tells you a little bit about my family. But, I mean, Orb was the heavy favorite with anybody and everybody, mainly because he won the Derby. And I'm actually going to talk about this later in the show. I'm going to talk about how horse racing and the media has hyped up whoever wins the first race automatically becomes a favorite because everyone's so, everyone's so crazy about finding a Triple Crown winner. It's been 35 years now. So I had Freedom Child. I thought Freedom Child was going to be an upset. I was looking for an upset. I didn't think it was going to be Palace Malice at 13-1, but I was looking for Freedom Child, who ended up, I think he ended up like fourth.
You know, I got off Palace Malice like late, like Saturday, you know, like early Saturday morning. I just kept reading, the racing form, and I just talked myself out of it. And that filly can run.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that filly might just hang around and end up being there. It looked like when it came time to let her go, there just wasn't enough there. Palace Malice had enough. I mean, that's a mile and a half. That's a long way, you know?
Yeah, and that's what they say. You know, they say it's two different races. You have the sprinters who come out first, and then you have the closers who run the second half and usually pass up. And a race like this, a mile and a half, you usually don't want to be the first horse to around the turn. You don't want to be the front runner because that probably means you use too much juice in the first half of the race, and a mile and a half is a long way to run for a horse. So,
well, Palace Malice's numbers were excellent because, you know, that first quarter mile was fast. And so I expected everybody to come from the back. It was really lining up good for Revolutionary and a couple of the other long shots, too. And it was lining up for Orp, too. You know, Orp was way back, and Orp started making his move, and Orp got in the midst of it, and Orp got outside, but Orp just didn't have enough to catch Palace Malice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Palace Malice, you know, that was a big surprise. I mean, it was a great exacta pay. I mean, the exacta was a lot of money. I mean,
yeah,
that was,
Exacto is
ridiculous. That was decent. And I, you know, and I of course I had a $20 exacto because I had somebody at the race, but I didn't have the right $20 exacto. I'm Bruce Hall, and you're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. But today it's going to be Roy Edwards' Second Opinion, and because you're going to lose me at the 10:15 mark today because I've got stuff I got to do. Somebody else is calling in too. This guy Scott Taylor from Cleveland. You've probably read, you know, you've probably seen his tweets. He was the front end news guy for the Amanda, you know, the girls that were kidnapped by the Ariel Castro guy that they finally got around to charging him the other day. You know, they indicted him in the courtroom, and he was the front end guy for that. He's still the front end guy for that. Any information that comes out that's new, he always has it first. He's also there's a closer of baseball player Chris Perez, who evidently somebody sent some marijuana to his house. You know, I think it was like 2 ounces of marijuana. It was like 54 grams or something.
Is that exact? That's not like, exact, of course. We don't know anything about ounces of grams.
No, we don't know anything yet. But and I don't even know if he's been charged. He hasn't been charged yet.
Well, it was sent to his house. Yeah,
they sent it to the dog.
Right.
Evidently, the FedEx. I think it's FedEx. It came Federal Express, if I'm not mistaken. Either that or UPS, and it came with the dog's name to it on it. And but listen, I want you to talk this thing out and find out what he knows, because it's a great story, it's an unbelievable story, and you know we've been tooting Cleveland Indians horns all year, right?
Yeah,
we like what they were doing.
Yeah, they're an interesting team, I guess. You know, they're in first place.
For yeah, crying out loud.
I mean they're not supposed
to
be there.
Cleveland
it's an underdog story. Yeah, absolutely.
But here was the deal. You know, we had Tony Mazur on, and I'm hoping Tony calls in after Scott, because Tony was kind of the guy that put me on to Scott. And, you know, Tony will tell you, well, this is vintage Cleveland Indian play. They've lost 6 in a row. I picked the team they're playing today. You've got my picks. When you go over baseball today and you give everybody your picks, make sure you read them mine. Because last weekend I actually did pretty good. During the week I did okay, but it's, you know, it's people are starting to kind of, you know, Detroit's starting to make their move because Cleveland obviously hasn't been winning lately.
Yep.
It's just a matter of time before the Tigers. And if you look at these rankings, they're so ridiculous. Like, you know, they've got, I think the Giants are ranked 14th, and that's fine, but their pitchers will come around. The Tigers were down to ranked like 11th or 12th last week. Now they're back around 8 or 9. But, you know, in my opinion, I mean, until somebody replaces them, they're number one, number two, number three, number four. They're in the top four. And I think that, the team everybody loves right now is obviously the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yep, it's hard not to love them.
They're not only pitching, they're hitting everything.
Yep, they're top of the league in pitching and hitting. And, you know, you're the San Francisco Giants, I hope that they come around in pitching. They got an ERA, over 4
Matt
right
Cain
now.
Matt Cain had a great outing this weekend. I mean, he looked like the old Matt Cain. Everything was sharper. You know, it's hard to stay on top of your game for 4 or 5 years in a row. And really, the Giants pitching has been in the top three in the league for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all those guys. Timmy Luscombe won 2 Cy Young Awards. Hell, even Barry Zito's pitching pretty well this year. I mean, you know, Z's about a 4, maybe a little less than a 4. Kaner will come down in the 3s eventually.
Right.
Timmy's almost in the 3s right now. He's actually seems to. I mean, last time out, he looked like the old Tim Lincecum.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you hope that team comes around, Bruce. But we're up against a break here. Thanks for coming on to your own show.
Great. Listen, you have a great show. Break a leg, boy.
Yeah. Enjoy Towson.
Have fun talking to those dudes.
Enjoy Towson. That's my hood up there. So you guys are listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You're with me all day. This is Roy G. We'll be right back.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
It's just me today, New York. So get used to this voice. You're going to hear a lot of it today. We got a couple good guests coming on here later today. But until they come on, I'd like to get into a couple different things. One, yes, the Belmont was yesterday. It's the third leg of the Triple Crown. And again, we go Triple Crown-less. So I like to compare the Belmont and really horse racing in general to the NBA, the current NBA. We've been 35 years now without a Triple Crown winner, yet every year, whoever wins the Derby is automatically the front runner for a Triple Crown. Everyone starts talking about them like they're the greatest horse ever. Everyone picks them as the favorite. Orb was the favorite going into the Belmont, and rightfully so. He was a good horse, and as a lot of people will tell you, this was a mediocre group of horses that were running. So he was the front runner in all three races. He got trapped in the Preakness and didn't finish very well. But the Belmont, he showed up a little bit again. He ran third. Palace Malice was the third different winner of one of the Triple Crown stakes. So Belmont saw a different Triple Crown or a different horse winning the race. So, but what I'm getting at is 35 years it's been since we had a Triple Crown winner. And we've had some close ones. We had I'll Have Another in 2012 who didn't even run the Belmont, but he won the Preakness in the Derby. We also had Big Brown in 2008 who did not finish. A lot of people remember that he had that foot injury going into the Belmont, and it was raining and it was muddy, and then the jockey pulled up, but he blew everybody away in the Derby and he blew everybody away in the Preakness. So he was close. Smarty Jones in 2004, Funny Side in 2003, War Emblem in 2002. So we've had some close ones.
And Barbaro.
Yeah,
that was the biggest one. That's the one that had like everybody like this could actually mm-hmm. be a Triple Crown winner.
Yeah, and you know it's.
But you have to get past the hype of.
But
everybody
it's
else.
All it is. It's hype.
There's so much hype for everybody else. Well, I think Barbaro was the only one that could have been mm-hmm. like had it in him to be a Triple Crown winner.
It's been since 1978 since we've had a Triple Crown winner, and that was affirmed.
And what I've heard is that they're being bred differently so that they're not able to finish the three races, that mm-hmm. they have really the upper leg muscles are really big, but the ankles are...
Well, they're different. There's different ways to breed a horse, and there's different horses that go, they have sires when they retire. They go in and they just basically breed the entire time. And
we have a call right now.
We have a call?
Yeah. I can't answer it. So, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Rick Snyder calling you.
Rick, how are you? Welcome to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion here on AM 1230 WFAS. And we're talking Belmont, which you had Orb as your favorite going into the Belmont, who finished third in the Belmont Stakes. Now, what did you like about Orb going into the race?
Well, you win the Derby and you think you understand these horses. And then the Preakness went nowhere like I thought it would go. And then this one goes nowhere where I thought it would go. I never would have thought Palace Malice would have won this race.
Mm-hmm.
The early pace, we had the slowest opening half mile in 40 years at the Preakness. And this time we had the fastest opening
right.
half mile since Secretariat.
Mm-hmm.
So that changes the race so much both times. But that said, I thought Orb was set up to have a shot to win it. And he did, but he just couldn't catch the winner at that point. I mean, he wasn't that far off a second. And it was his home track. Sean McGahey's a New York trainer. He did it with Easy Goer years ago. He bounced him back for a big win in the Belmont.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things that said he could do it. And I was surprised Oxbow ran as well as he did. And then Palace Mouse, total surprise because he finished 12th in the Derby. Showed nothing. And that just shows that these three-year-olds are basically a bunch of okay horses. Nothing really great out of the whole group. They pretty much just took turns in the three races doing all kind of things. So an average mediocre year, and that's how horses pop up.
Yeah, and I was I read your article, and I was interested to find that we both liked the same underdog horse going into the Belmont Stakes in Freedom Child. Now, he didn't he came out strong, but he couldn't hold it off. And
he was ahead back at second after a mile, and I thought this race is setting up perfectly for
mm-hmm.
him. And then he dropped like a rock to 13th. I mean,
yeah.
He went from second to 11th in a quarter mile. He just quit. So I was a little surprised because the horses raced well. He also faced very well over the slop, and I thought the track wasn't going to be fast because of the rains, but it dried out.
Yeah, and for I was talking about this a little bit before we just had you on, that another year goes by. It's been 35 years since our last Triple Crown winner, and now we have three different winners in all three races. And, you know, I talked about in recent years, we've had, I'll have another who was close, Big Brown, Smarty Jones. We've had all these close calls, but it seems like all we want is a Triple Crown winner. And you said it was a mediocre group. Do you think that three different winners is bad for horse racing? Do you think that we need the Triple Crown winner for everyone to be hyped about horse racing and really bring this sport back to where it once was?
Well, I don't think it'll ever be back to where it once was. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Triple Crown winner will not be great for the sport. I'll tell you why. He'll be immediately retired stud because they won't be able to risk him and they won't be able to insure him.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance, like on Secretariat and all, at the end they raced a couple times for the public back then, but they can't win enough purse money to cover the insurance money on them.
Right.
So you cannot take the financial risk. Plus, they're owned by syndicates who are immediately thinking of stud fees. You know, I mean, it's such a financial thing that a Triple Crown winner, oh, it'd be great for 5 minutes. And then you're going to hear something about he's retired. They just won't keep him in the game. And so it's not going to have any kind of lasting effect. So sure, it'd be nice to see a great horse come by, but it's not going to turn around this industry.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. The amount of breeding that goes through and everyone's trying to grab the big name horses that is in today's horse racing is crazy. I heard something yesterday, and I'm not sure if this is right or not, but I'm sure you'll be able to correct me, that nine of the horse running had Secretariat somewhere in their bloodline. Was that true?
I didn't see that stat, but it would not surprise me. I mean, because Secretariat would have, well, let's say 100 or so mares a year that he would impregnate. So, you know, you keep trickling down, and that was, you know, he was in the stallion barn for 20-some years. Yeah, it's not unusual at all for everybody to be sharing some kind of gene pool there. I mean, one time it was other horses, like Danzig was like that, or Northern Dancer was like that out of Maryland for a long time. You know, if they produce good ones, Secretariat was known more for producing great fillies than great colts. But he had a couple, but he was not the superstar stallion that people hoped, and that's because he was a genetic freak. Mm-hmm. He had a heart 3 times the size of a normal horse's heart. That's not something you pass on in the bloodline. That's a unique thing to him, and that's why he was not, you know, the superstar people hoped.
Yeah, and I also heard a lot about Freedom Child going forward, that a lot of people think that he might be a favorite going forward. He's obviously going to continue racing, and a lot of people had him as that, as someone who could have been a strong contender. I know you wrote about it. I thought that he you know, would maybe at least show. So what do you think about Freedom Child moving forward? Do you think that this is the last time we've heard his name, or do you think he's a name that pops up in the future?
Well, if he's handled smartly, they'll move to the right races. And I don't know if he's going to go over and win the Travers and Haskell and Breeders' Cup kind of things, but he could definitely win. I think he's a plan B horse, and I think he could be a sprinter more than a distance horse. So with, you know, proper management, like Lost Code years ago, won 7 straight stakes, but he avoided all the big boys mostly. But he won a lot of great races, but he just, you know, his trainer was smart enough to know he's not going to be good enough to beat the top ones until they had to face off at the very end of the year. So that's how you manage a horse correctly. Some of these horses, you know, like Orb, you know, they're already talking about Orb may or may not make the Travers, which is in about 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to rest them. They're all thinking Breeders' Cup. So there may be some chances if Freedom Child is fresh to find things in the summer because the others are taking time off.
Yeah, and Orb disappointed a lot of people this year through the
well,
three
I mean,
races and getting caught in the back.
The Derby. Yeah, I mean, you win the Derby, that can't be too big a disappointment.
Right.
Third in the Belmont, you know, that's not bad. I mean, the Preakness really baffled me.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like being in close quarters, and when it was time for him to fire, he just got claustrophobia and didn't do it. I didn't think he was going to be a super horse.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he might be the best of a mediocre bunch. So, you know, he'll be okay, and he may come back this fall. I mean, there's nobody out of these pools that you're looking at to go, wow, that's the 3-year-old champ.
Right.
I think that's long to be determined.
Now, I couldn't have you on without talking about Washington Redskins. and Robert Griffin III's knee. So what's the progress there? A lot of people have been made, you know, the Adidas campaign that said all in for week one. So will he be ready? How's he looking in OTAs and camp and everything like that?
Well, he's looked good so far, and that's very encouraging. And I would say it's possible he could be ready for the first week of the season. But, boy, it's a long ways to go. I mean, don't believe the hype about all this. This is all commercialism. The question is, can his knee really hold up? Well, so far in OTAs, he's been okay. This week is mini camp for the Redskins. He'll be on the field four straight days. And we'll see how his knee does from that.
Right.
You know, that's the key. Does it blow up? Does it have any setbacks? This is a big week because after this, they kind of take off until training camp, you know, end of July, July 25th. So this week will tell us a little bit about his readiness. I don't expect him to do a lot in the preseason. I think they're going to be cautious. I don't even know if he'll play in the preseason. And that's okay because you're practicing. He can still go week one. So I guess I'd say 50-50, and that's probably a long ways from where I would have said like 10-90, you know, 2 months ago. So the kids, you know, an unusual person, and he's young, he's healing very quickly. So it's possible. I mean, but I don't want to see him throw him out there and then watch something bad happen because this is their franchise player.
Right, yeah, and a lot of people gave the Shanahan some grief for throwing him out there after the injury when he was limping around and saying that he was misused properly. So a lot of eyes are on the knee of Robert Griffin III going forward. And as they play in a division with the New York Giants and the Dallas Cowboys, and a very interesting story in the Philadelphia Eagles and them possibly running a college formation going forward, how do you think the Redskins fare up as the defending NFC East champions?
If Griffin can play, you know, 14-plus games, I'd say they have as good a shot as anyone of winning the title. I mean, they won it last year, but that was a 7-game winning streak. That was impressive, but also a little fluky. But, you know, there's nobody in the division that almost anybody can win the division. It's pretty balanced. I mean, I don't know what to make of Chip Kelly's thing. I think it'll be successful very short term, and then everyone's going to figure it out real quick. You got to remember, defensive coordinators live in that film room. They'll figure you out in a couple weeks. So the Redskins open with them. That'll be interesting. They won't have, they won't show anything in the preseason, so they're going to have to guess. But the Redskins are pretty much the same team as last year that finished the division strong. So if Griffin's healthy, I could very much see them winning the East again.
Now switching gears again to baseball, the Washington Nationals, a lot of people had them as the super team, you know, the first since the Yankees to win over 100 and some game, you know, 105 games or whatever people had them at, and now they're starting to struggle. So what's been made of the Nationals? Is the pitching staff, is there something wrong there? I know there's a lot of injuries going on, but what do you see with the Nationals going forward? Do you think they have what it takes to make a run at that title again?
Well, I think we'll find out tomorrow about Bryce Harper. I mean, he's the engine of this group. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. And he's going to find out tomorrow how his knee is from Dr. James Andrews. Usually you hear Dr. Andrews' name, and then you hear surgery after that.
Yeah.
So it's supposedly he's doing better, but if he goes on surgery, I don't know that he comes back this year. And that cripples this team, I think, offensively. And defensively, Strasburg now, who knows what's going on with that. Gio's pitched okay, but not like last year's 21-game winner. I mean, last year, this is the big problem that people fall into in sports. They're always thinking, well, it was great this year, and it sets up for future success. And the answer is, no, it doesn't, because tomorrow is not guaranteed to today's team. And that was where I was a little upset that they pulled Strasburg last fall, because to me, you bring Strasburg here to win a World Series, not to win 200 games. You know, it's to win a World Series. They could have had him pitching in that fifth game and made a difference and advances in the playoffs. Because this year, you just don't say, well, if you won 98 last year, you're going to win 105 this year. It just doesn't work that way. And injuries have been a big problem for them. They've not had a healthy lineup all year. So if they can get everyone back, if Bryce can come back, I think they can make a wild card. But Atlanta's a very good team. I mean,
yeah,
they showed that last year when they came hard at the Nats. So I think they're playing for second. I think they can. But, boy, they got to pull it together. They got to get healthy.
Yeah, I agree. And Rick Snyder, thanks for coming on with us. This is with the Washington Examiner. You can read his stuff on WashingtonExaminer.com. Rick, thanks for coming on with us tonight, babe.
All right, thank you.
For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. We got a lot more for you here on News Talk, AM 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
That was Rick Snyder, writer for the Washington Examiner. We had him on talk a little horse racing. And, of course, whenever we have anyone out of Washington, we got to get into the Robert Griffin, the knee. And we got to get into the Washington Nationals, how everybody thought they were going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. And now find themselves, what, two games under 500? So, before I had Rick on, I was starting the comparison of horse racing to the current NBA. It's been, as been mentioned, it's been 35 years since the last Triple Crown winner that was affirmed. And to give you a little bit of idea of how big horse racing was, it's not horse racing isn't as big as it once was, and as Rick said, it probably will never be as big as it once was. That's because the entire country revolved around horse racing, literally revolved around horse racing. The railroads were built around horse racing. Horse racing, in order to transport horses from race to race to expand the sport, money backers and people who are big into horse racing built railroads to go to different cities so they could move their horse in, so they could earn more money, so they could build the sport. Whenever you have public transportation built around your sport, you own the country. You own the people's hearts. When you look at other sports that were big and have fizzled out, you look at boxing. Now, boxing, although it isn't what it used to be, it is starting to make a comeback in other forms. Fighting, that is. With it, we have MMA and the UFC are starting to make a push. Turn your mic on there,
yeah,
buddy.
Beating the crap out of another guy will never go
exactly
out of fashion.
Yeah. Fighting,
it's just how you do it
exactly
that will be different.
The rules have changed, but fighting is fighting.
As long as it gets more violent,
yes,
you'll be fine.
Fighting, people enjoy fighting. That's why WWF, or I guess it's WWE now.
I'm thinking knife fighting might be the next craze.
See,
after MMA goes out, it'll just be like, you know, cut.
I don't know about that, but that's what you're saying. We grow up, we like to see fighting. We like to see people struggle. We
just
like to
general
see
violence in general.
Violence sells, which is why boxing controlled the country. Anyone could box. People could pick up boxing gloves. Anyone can fight another person.
You can beat the crap out of anybody,
mm-hmm,
and it just depends on how many people are watching.
Exactly.
It makes it a sport or not.
And now boxing, the death of boxing was the different belts. No, there is no champion in boxing.
Not heavyweight. Yeah,
well,
the death of boxing is basically Klitschko was like the last big heavyweight.
Well, there's
fighter.
No champion. There's a billion different belts.
Yeah,
there's speculation as to who's champion.
Everybody knows who's gonna be who's the big guy. Like you had Klitschko, you had
okay,
you had Tyson, you had
right.
Who was the guy from Britain?
Holyfield. We had Holyfield.
The guy who's the English guy with the dreads.
Oh, I don't know.
Great fighter. Damn, I don't remember his name. But you always knew who.
Well, now we have Mayweather. We have Pacquiao.
They're not heavyweights, though, and they, you know, they're.
But
they're important. But
they're the
not,
best fighters today, right?
But they're not heavyweights, and that's what everybody wants to know who the biggest baddest MF-er is,
mm-hmm, which is now where we're getting into the MMA. That's the UFC is the new
exactly.
Those the biggest baddest
if
dudes.
If you're Tyson. Now, if like you're 20 year old Tyson or how old was he? Like 17 when he came into the sport.
Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure how old he was, but he controlled the sport.
If he came into the sport now, he'd be like, I could, you know, put these gloves on and.
I would love to see Mike Tyson in his prime.
I could go and just rip you apart.
I would love to see Mike Tyson in his prime fight MMA. Because that dude already had a crazy side to him. He was biting off ears. I would have loved to see him
although
fight MMA.
He had some tiny little legs, and you have to work on.
Well, he was a boxer.
Yeah,
so, he was a boxer.
So,
but
I don't know. That's the great conversation that can come out of that is, you know, would Tyson be a good? No, he could probably get his leg shattered.
See, I think he would have been a great MMA fighter. He had that edge.
Would.
There was just no. There was no real. I mean, sure, there was jiu-jitsu. Has been around for. forever, seemingly, but not to the point that it is today. There was the UFC is this new monster that a lot of people don't even really know
Austin
what to do
Powers
with.
Austin Powers version, though, was like judo chop.
Well, it's been around in other countries, not really in the United States. But UFC is this new monster. You know, Fox has picked it up. FX has picked it up. You know, they're starting to market it with different shows. Yeah. And that's how boxing is starting to make its return. Horse racing is starting
it's
to make its return.
It's not making its return, though. It will not make light. Its return until my wife knows who the heavyweight champion is.
And that's
when you're like, okay, boxing is back.
Boxing used to be a household event. Now we have football. Football is slow enough where the new person can understand it, but fast enough that we are captivated by what's going on, and then there's the violence to it, which I think is why there's a lot of
they can exist in the same spectrum, though, because I everybody was following football while Tyson was fighting,
right.
it's not like
there's
they're,
a lot
they're
no
separate.
they can coexist, it's, but we've seen as a country
we like multiple forms of violence. It's not like we have our favorite
absolutely.
Form of violence,
right?
It's like anytime we can get it on our screen, we'll be fine.
No, absolutely, but.
I'm going to change the channel and be like, oh, this violence is cool, but it's in a commercial break, so I'm going to do this violence.
Well, as Americans, we've seen this, we only captivate ourselves through one sport. We have one major sport, and everything else kind of goes to the wayside. Even in the days of horse racing and boxing, it was horse racing. And then before that, it was boxing. And then it kind of transitioned over, and then it was baseball. We captivate ourselves with one love, and it's football now, and football is pushed worldwide. Sure, we love baseball, but baseball doesn't do the numbers that the NFL does. Basketball doesn't do the numbers that the NFL does. NHL has had two lockouts in the past 10 years. It obviously doesn't do the numbers that the NFL does.
It's surprisingly getting more important just because it has more violence. But I think we say this, we say that, you know, it's all about the violence. We like our different types of violence. But I think there's also that X factor of we also like to see someone exceeding the bettering everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And we need that elite example of sportsmanship that we just don't see it in.
Which
in
is that's a
right now. We're
perfect,
not seeing it in horse racing anymore.
That's a perfect segue into what
I
want to talk
Jordan.
About.
We don't have our Michael Jordan.
There is no Michael Jordan. There's no Michael Jordan in any of our sports except possibly NFL. We have the Tom Brady's. We have the Peyton Manning's.
Yeah.
We have Adrian Peterson, who could go down as the best running back who ever played. We still got to see what goes on with the knee this year. But last year, unbelievable season. We have Megatron. You know, Calvin Johnson could possibly go down, I wouldn't say the best, but the best since Jerry Rice, because Jerry Rice is one of the best football players, let alone wide receivers, who's ever played the game.
Yeah, that's a good question, or that's a good point, though. Has the NFL forgotten about wide receivers?
Well, no.
Back in the 80s, it was about everybody. It was you know, Montana to Rice. It was we always cared about the receiver. Now it's like we have three receivers. We just throw them out there. There's not really.
Well, it's more of a spread game
one.
Now.
Yeah,
it's more of a spread game where there's multiple.
You're not
going to
get your Michael Jordan out of it. Like probably the last one.
The quarterback's
that
the new.
About. Yeah,
the quarterback is the
but
new big scar.
Be, you know,
he's the new big guy.
It's Montana to Rice.
Well,
they're both the
there
Michael
was always,
Jordan. Now
I mean,
you have the Jordan to maybe Pippen.
Well, the quarterback has always played a major role, but until really the last, I don't know, 10 years. It hasn't really been you better have a quarterback to win a Super Bowl. It wasn't that prior to the last 10 years. It was, you have to have a complete football team, you got to have a defense, you got to have a running back. So the stars were everywhere.
Basically, the first Baltimore Super Bowl totally ruined that.
Well, Ray Lewis was the star of that team. Ed Reed was the star of that team. Yeah. Trent Dilfer was not the star of that team.
Yeah,
you know, and he was their quarterback. You look at some of the other, I mean, Doug Williams. Everybody loves Doug Williams in Washington, and everybody loves to point to him. He's the first African-American quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl, but he wasn't the starting quarterback that year. He nobody heard from him again. There was back then, it was Joe Gibbs won three different Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks. Quarterbacks were interchangeable. You needed a team. Now it's, if you don't have a quarterback, you're screwed.
Yeah, back then it was the line.
It's all about the team. It's all about the, you know, now it's all about the star. It's all about the star now, which is what this, and the NBA.
That's what worries you about the Redskins right now with Robert Griffin.
Yeah,
because you're like, this is still the team that, you know, sucked it up in the past, well, you know.
But we get so captivated by a star. We want the next Michael Jordan to be here. That's why we like to pull LeBron James. Oh, he's the next Michael Jordan. He's the greatest basketball player who's ever lived. Blah, 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 blah. Well, slow down. The guy, you know, he's only won one NBA Finals. And it was last year.
That's all.
Kobe Bryant won 5. Michael Jordan won 6.
Yeah.
People have won 11. Okay? Yeah. It's happened. You win one.
But
lots of people have won one.
It's not just the titles. It's the skill. You have to be more flashy than Michael Jordan to be the next Michael Jordan.
And
you have to be the next.
So LeBron James is flashy to you?
LeBron James isn't flashy.
He's not flashy.
He's not the next Michael Jordan.
No.
Kobe Bryant. He's not the next Michael Jordan.
Well, Kobe Bryant's done. He with the Achilles injury and his age. I mean, but he had a heck of a run.
Everybody thought
he had 5 NBA finals. Or 5 NBA championships, 7 finals.
The problem was that he wasn't a big step above Jordan that you're like, oh, who's going to be the next Kobe Bryant?
Which leads me to this comparison to horse racing and the NBA. Horse racing, somebody wins the Derby, and that is automatic our favorite horse. That is the one that everybody's rooting for. He's the greatest thing since affirmed. He's going to be the next Triple Crown. And to give you an idea of how special the Triple Crown is to the United States, the last jockey who rode for a Triple Crown winner, he was the Sportsman of the Year in 1977 for SI, and he was the Athlete of the Year for the AP in 1977. That's how much horse racing, when we have a Triple Crown, that's how much they mean to us. Their jockey, not the horse, the jockey who rides the horse, which plays a big part in racing, but he's the Sportsman of the Year. He's the Athlete of the Year from the SI and the AP. And now we're looking for that next horse. We're looking for the next jockey. We're looking for the next great. Same with the NBA now. We hang so much on LeBron James and that he might be the next great. So when anyone insults who might be the next Michael Jordan, it ruffles feathers. And we see that, and I'll get into this on the other side, that Dennis Rodman, who played with the greatest of all time, came out and said something about LeBron, and I'll get into that on the other side. But first, I have something to say. For the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect homeownership. Hang on to the other side. This is AM 1230 WFAS. We'll be right back.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. This is AM 1230 WFAS. And right now I am joined by Scott Taylor of 19 Action News out of Cleveland. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, anytime for you guys.
All right. So the MLB, a lot have been made, you know, from this this report that came out of Miami and the drugs and the performance enhancings and everything. But now a new drug story has surfaced, and it's out of Cleveland. Tell us a little bit about this Chris Perez story.
Well, Chris Perez, 2-time All-Star for the Cleveland Indians. You know, he's on the DL right now. But it all really started earlier in the week when Twitter just blew up. You probably saw it. I know Bruce saw it. He was actually arrested, which I quickly checked on. He was never arrested earlier this week. So then it died down for a couple of days. And then on Friday, it really started when he and his wife were actually charged with possession of a controlled substance. And this all started through the U.S. Postal Service, a narcotics enforcement agency down here called the West Shore Enforcement Bureau, and the Rocky River Police, which is a city just really affluent city just right outside of Cleveland. And a package arrived last Saturday, 2 packages mailed from California, addressed to a Brody Baum to Chris Perez's and Melanie Perez's house in Rocky River. The Rocky River Postal Service noticed that it smelled strange. They thought it smelled like marijuana. So they alerted investigators. Postal Service investigators came in, and the West Shore Enforcement Bureau came in. They actually got a canine dog named Jet, who marked it as positive for marijuana. So they took an undercover agent. They delivered it to Chris Perez's home. Melanie, his wife, was there. She accepted it. That's when they went out and got a search warrant, came into Chris Perez's home. And by the way, what's really interesting is it was addressed to Brody Baum. And Baum happens to be Melanie Perez's maiden name. And Brody, believe it or not, is Chris and Melanie's dog. So they came in. They searched the whole house. Chris and Melanie were very cooperative with investigators. And according to the reports that I obtained from the U.S. Postal Service, Rocky River Police, and the West Shore Enforcement Bureau, Melanie says she had no idea what was in the package. Chris immediately volunteered that, listen, any marijuana, you know, in this house is mine, and it is for my personal use. He took investigators down into the basement. He has a kitchen down in the basement. The two packages were sitting out on a patio floor outside, but inside he led investigators, according to these reports, and we haven't heard anything yet from Chris or Melanie, but according to these reports, led them to two mason jars where they believed there was marijuana in there. Now, the packages that were delivered, the agents say, did contain over 9 ounces of marijuana. When they got into his house, they now are charging him with possession of marijuana in a total of 5.7 ounces.
Wow. That is,
does this shock you or not? Because really, you know, Indian fans are a little surprised. We are a little used to, though, Chris Perez being a little outspoken, a little bit different from most major league players. But, I mean, does this shock you or not?
I mean, the shocking part to me, not that an athlete got caught with marijuana. I mean, seemingly that happens every season. Somebody pops up somewhere. But the whole story of use through the Postal Service – and to have that much, and it's not, there's no denying it, really. The guy, it's made out to his dog, which is ridiculous to me. I what is the backlash that's going to happen from this guy? I mean, he can't remain a Cleveland Indian, can he?
Well, you know what? That's still up in the air. The Cleveland Indians came back, and like most Major League Baseball teams, said, listen, we'll let the legal process, play out, and then we'll take a decision. You know, a lot of people here think he'll be back on the team pitching soon, to believe it or not.
Wow.
But, you know, when you talk about the legality of this, it's a misdemeanor. It's a $250 fine, 30 days in jail. You're a first offender. You go through a diversion program and get this wipe clear. Now, his legal team has already come out and said, listen, on June 19th, when Melanie and Chris are both arraigned in Rocky River Municipal Court, they're going to plead not guilty. So, of course, we haven't heard Chris's side or Melanie's side. In America, you're innocent until proven guilty, so we're going to have to wait for that. You know, another interesting part of this, though, is investigators say in the reports that Melanie suggested a fan might have sent the package to the house, which, you know, I'm not exactly sure what she was meaning by that, because it was addressed to her dog.
Yeah.
The last name was her maiden name, so that just seemed a little odd.
That is a little weird. If you're trying to bring the fans into this, I don't know where she's getting at there. And the whole story that he jumps to the front and says that it's all mine, it almost seems like he might be sticking up for his wife, which, understandably so, the dog has her last name and everything like that. I mean, it's just a wild story to me, and it's really the first, I guess, bad thing that's come out of Cleveland in this baseball season, at least, where this team has gotten on a hot streak, and they're one of the top teams in their division. So they are.
You know, they're 30-31 now. They lost, you know, last night to Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, Chris six saves, 0-2, but they're in this 6-game slump right now, which really does not help the attendance. You know, with Cleveland for the last couple of years just have not shown up for games. And yeah, I think we like what we see right now. You got Nick Swisher, though. What is he, 0-24? He's in a slump. So who knows, good or bad, maybe this will kick them in the rear and let's win a couple of games here in Cleveland.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't send the Indians going the wrong way down this path, because they have. They've started out great. I mean, they're still, what, 5.5 games out of the wild card, but this is not a spot where anyone thought the Indians were going to be. A lot of people had them finishing not only near the bottom of their division, but near the bottom of baseball. So they are going through a little bit of a slide, but do you think they pick things back up? Do you think this is, like you said, do you think this is a kick in the rear?
Yeah, I think this is a different team this year. You've got some veteran leadership in the clubhouse. I think Cleveland believes that will happen. They just aren't showing up. I don't think, you know, this is a Cleveland Browns town when you come down to it.
Yeah.
So I think the Indians have to put out a consistent winner out there before the fans show up. But we love our Indians. And I think the majority of the fan base think they're going to turn it around.
Well, I hope so. I mean, it's a great story what they've been doing this year, and you know, it's one of the underdog stories. And you know, as sporting fans here in America, we love our underdogs. So obviously, we're all rooting for the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Hey, my 6-year-old is a big Nick Swisher fan, and has his fat head up on the bedroom wall, and we watch, you know, almost every game. We were watching it last night. He was cheering them along. Thought they would come back against the Tigers, but. You know, it just didn't happen.
Very nice. Well, and then Cleveland, I guess I can't have somebody on here from Cleveland and not talk about LeBron James. So LeBron, he's back in the finals against the Spurs, who the Spurs defeated the Cleveland Cavaliers last time LeBron was in the finals against them. Is there still a lot of hate for LeBron in Cleveland? Because there has been rumors circulating now that there might be a return to Cleveland for the King.
Yeah, you know what? I've done, as investigative reporter here, I've done several stories on LeBron and his people when they were here at his organization, because he has a very tight-knit organization with his high school friends. I've met LeBron in the past during interviews, one of the nicest NBA stars I've ever met, very gracious, very polite. I think he was not going to come back to Cleveland. I think that is just his PR machine swirling it around, trying to ease a little pain in Cleveland. You know, Akron, where he's from, will always love him, always embrace him. Let's hope he comes back towards the end of his career. That could mean a championship here in Cleveland. They put the right people around him. If Kyrie Irving sticks around, Cleveland, I think, has a love-hate relationship still. Mm-hmm. I think some of the pain, some of the wound is there. There's still a scab, though. So that can be ripped open if he really talks about coming here and, you know, just never backs that up, to be honest with you. So I just want to know from you, though, I mean, who are you picking here, Miami or the Spurs?
Well, I'm not I'm not the biggest LeBron James fan. I guess I kind of side with Cleveland on the whole decision and, you know, the ripping of the wound and everything that you just mentioned. I'm not the biggest LeBron James fan. And a lot of that is reflected on the LeBron James supporters and how they think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and he's already surpassed Jordan for some unknown reason, and all the hype that surrounds LeBron James. So I'm rooting against LeBron. I think the Heat are the better team here. They have the superstars. But the way that the Spurs played in Game 1 and Wade not scoring and the disappearance of Chris Bosh throughout the playoffs, this Spurs team, although they are old, that also comes with experience. So I think the Spurs, if they can keep up and they can play the way that they played in Game 1, I think they're going to be sending your buddy LeBron home again in the finals. So
listen, you're old school, and I understand that I'm old school too. If I had to pick between the two, I would pick the Spurs as well. It's the tradition. I think they play as a team. They're not buying the championship. Mm-hmm. So I would go with the Spurs as well. But here's the problem with that. You just can't count this guy out. Love him or hate him,
yeah,
he is arguably the best player in the world. And can he carry a team for a couple games? Sure he can. He did that in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to wonder, though, if Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh are going to allow him to do that. If they kick it up in high gear, I think they can beat anybody. They can take any series. But right now, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Spurs are an old-school team,
yeah,
and boy, can they play basketball and defense.
Yeah, they're one of the few old-school teams still left in the game. There's not many true centers out there like a Duncan. There's not many teams who have the balance that the Spurs have. And the Miami Heat really don't have that balance. Eric Spoelstra has been praised for playing that five-wide system with, you know, with the guards on the floor. And you can't really play that against the Spurs. You know, Birdman Anderson, you know, him coming back in and him being suspended against the Pacers in Game 6, I think is really the only reason they lost that Game 6. And if the Miami Heat want to have any sort of hope in this finals, I think Chris Anderson has to play a bigger role than a lot of people are thinking.
Yeah, I think so. But I think the Spurs have the bigs to slow him down and negate him. And what's the crazy thing about this is, and Miami fans have to hate it, is when LeBron talked about his old Cleveland days.
Yeah.
That he really went back to his Cleveland days. And here in Cleveland, we all know about that. Top of the key, dribble, 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 you know, drive or shoot, usually shoot from the outside, and that just wasn't successful winning the championship.
Yeah, and you mentioned that in the news. You said, I'm not going to go back to my Cleveland days, as if to put down who the Cavaliers were. Well, Scott, thanks for coming on with us, buddy. You can follow him at ScottTaylor19 on Twitter. Thank you very much for coming on and talking about this crazy Perez story with us.
Hey, it's not going to go away soon. Anytime you guys need me, give me a holler.
Thanks again. All right, stick with us on the other side. We'll be right back. Talk some more NBA Finals with you. It's AM 1230 WFAS.
This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play it, just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
So I just had a moment. That was fun. For all of you who are listening on smcradio.com and wondered why it's just dead air, that's because I created a dead loop of airtime. So you were just hearing nothing. I was broadcasting nothing and hearing nothing. So
you were feeding the silence.
I was feeding
into
the silent into the silent. An infinite loop of nothing.
That's very Depeche Mode.
That's poetry. That's poetry at its best.
It's deep.
So now it's there. If you want to listen on smcradio.com, go right ahead. We are also live at iHeartRadio AM 1230 WFAS. So, wow. But, like I promised, I told you that I was going to get into what Rodman said about Mr. LeBron James. It was a quote from Mr. Rodman who said that LeBron James would be an average player if he had played in the 90s, if he had played in the late 80s, early 90s, saying that he would be an average player. I'll pull the exact quote up here for you just a second. But this has ruffled a lot of LeBron supporters' feathers. Obviously, if you call the greatest player in the world and you say he would just be average if he had played during Michael Jordan's time, who this LeBron James, the king, the chosen one, whatever you want to call him, the Mr. I have history tattooed on his leg because he believes that he's bigger than the game. If you take him and you say that he would be an average player in the 90s, you're going to ruffle a couple feathers. But I'm here to tell you that Rodman's right. Dennis Rodman is right that LeBron James would be just an average player if he had played in the 90s. Now here, let me explain myself. Is LeBron James a great basketball player? Absolutely. But if you look at the time period, if you look at the 90s, if you look at the time that Dennis Rodman is talking about, there were amazing basketball players, not great basketball players. There were amazing basketball players. You're talking about the golden age of the NBA. Let me run down the All-Star teams for you of the 1992 season in the heart of when Dennis Rodman is talking about. For the West, Magic Johnson, Clyde Drexler, Karl Malone, David Robinson, Tim Hardaway, Hakeem Olajuwon, Jock Stockton, Dikembe Mutombo, Mr. Fingerwag himself, and Sean Kemp was in 1993. So if you take those names, that's just the West. That's not all of the All-Stars. That's just the West. How many Hall of Famers do we have there? Now let's take a look at the East. Isaiah Thomas, Michael Jordan, I believe you've heard of him. Charles Barkley, Larry Bird, Patrick Ewing, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Dominique Wilkins, Shaq was in 93, Larry Johnson was in 93. Now, if you jump to the next year, that 93 team, who I have a couple names on there, and you look at Patrick Ewing, Patrick Ewing is regarded one of the best centers to ever play the game, and he was one of the best college basketball centers to ever play the game. So if you take his name, and would anyone ever call Patrick Ewing average? Well, in 1993 All-Star game, he was a reserve. He didn't even start on the All-Star team. So that tells you a little bit about this time that Dennis Rodman is comparing LeBron to. Would LeBron have been an NBA player back then? Absolutely would have been an NBA player back then, and he would have started, and he would have been a face of a franchise, probably of the Cleveland Cavaliers. But if you put LeBron James on the Bulls, he's not the face of that franchise. If you put him on the Celtics, he's not the face of that franchise. If you put him on the Hawks, he's not the face of the franchise. If you put him on the Pacers, if you put him on the Knicks, if you put him on the Lakers, if you put him on the Magic, if you put him on any of those teams, he's not the face of the franchise. He's just another guy. So, to me, is he an average basketball player in the 90s if you're comparing him to all these great names? Absolutely, he's an average player. He's an above-average player. He's still a very good basketball player. But if he had played in the 90s, nobody is saying that LeBron James is the greatest player to ever play. That title still belongs to Michael Jordan. If you take a look at the run, if you do want to compare him to Michael Jordan, and you take a look at the run that Michael Jordan had through the postseason, Michael Jordan played 13 playoff years. He made 13 playoff appearances, okay? He won the NBA title 6 times. So he's 6-for-13 in playoffs. If he makes the playoffs, 46% of the time, he's going to win the NBA title. That is ridiculous. 46% of the time, if Michael Jordan makes it into the postseason, he's coming home with a ring and a title. LeBron, he is, what? This is his third, fourth NBA title, or NBA finals getting to. Fourth. He won it with Miami last year. He lost it to the Mavericks. He lost it to the Spurs. So he's not batting a very good average right now. He is, however, the top scorer in Game 7s. That's where this whole comparison to newest comparison to Jordan has come up. And when he goes to Game 7, LeBron James is the all-time leading scorer in average points in that series. I believe he is scoring. He had 32. It was 32 or 34 points. Now, Michael Jordan also, he only played in 3 Game 7s. LeBron has already played in 4. In those 3 Game 7s that Michael Jordan played, he scored 42, 38, and 28 for 33.4. So LeBron really only has him by a half of a point.
All right. So do you think the game has changed?
Absolutely.
Since then?
That is my whole...
Your cannon fodder on players are better these days.
The
conditioning of the players is better. Muscle mass, you know, people train differently.
Much differently.
Do you put that into context when you're making this comparison?
Well, let's take a look at the second best player in the NBA. Who would you say the second best player in the NBA is? Kevin Durant? You heard his name a couple times, I'm sure.
Maybe.
People would say that Kevin Durant is the second best player in the NBA right now. Kevin Durant would also be an average basketball player in this time. In the 90s, that Dennis Rodman is comparing it to. Because if you look at the top players during that time period, they're much different than the top players in today's time period. The top players in today's time, they're guards and they're point guards. And everyone points to LeBron James and they say, look at his size. He is a power forward center who can handle like a point guard. Yeah, this is true, but there was a guy named Magic Johnson who could do that too. So,
yeah, but
if
look
you look
at who
at the
those
build,
guys were playing against. They were guys that like looked like
us. No, they were not. They were absolutely did not look like us. They were bigger. There were the Towers back then. There were the Clyde Drexlers, the Karl Malones, the Charles Barkley, who was said to be undersized but was a scrapper. Dikembe Mutombo had a couple good years back there. He was they were.
I can't think of him now without thinking that commercial.
It's the commercial.
Not
it's all
my
about
house.
It's all about the commercial. But Dennis Rodman was a scrapper. Patrick Ewing, Larry Bird is someone similar to a LeBron James, where he was a big man but could play the guarding and could control a game with his shot. You know, they were all about Dominique Wilkins, Shaq. They were the big. If you didn't have a center in the 90s, you didn't have a team.
Yeah.
So nowadays, how many teams have a center? Not many. The LA Lakers have a center. They had a heck of a year, didn't they? No. Okay, I mean, the teams are not built, they're built differently. So when you tell me that LeBron James is the best player we've ever seen, well, he's a big man with handles who's playing against, and he's playing in a time period where it's majority run by guards. Guards and point guards. You look at the top players in the NBA right now, they're LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and then a whole bunch of guards and point guards. You know, Rajon Rondo might make that list. D. Will from the Nets might make that list. CP3 might make that list. They're all point guards. They're little guys. Whereas back then, if you talked about the best players in the world, there was Michael Jordan, the scorer, and then there was a whole bunch of big men. And if you didn't have a big man, you didn't win a championship.
So I'll take it full circle to us back to horse racing. Do you think Secretariat would have placed in a race held this year?
Secretariat? Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think of, you know, all the advancements we've made in breeding and you know,
yeah,
choosing
but,
the different horses, you know, and
but see, horse racing is different because we can take those times that they ran and we can put them up against the times now and we can see and you can say, okay, well, this horse ran this such and such time and this horse ran such and such time. So we can put the ghosts next to each other and boom. Now, it's a little you know, horses are not like cars. If you're driving a car, then you can really take the time and you say this person ran it at this time and this person ran it at this time and you're in a car, cars advance. Mm-hmm. But horse are an animal.
Yeah.
And they feed off the horse next to them. So, like Seabiscuit. Have you ever seen the movie Seabiscuit?
Unfortunately, yes.
Great movie.
Part of it.
I love that movie. But the whole thing...
Most of it was spent checking my phone.
The whole thing about Seabiscuit is that he had to see the other horse in the eye. He had to be competitive. That was how he ran. If you ran him by himself and you just compared times like we're hypothetically talking about right now, if you just compared times, then Seabiscuit probably wouldn't have... ran better than Orb. If Orb runs straight and Seabiscuit runs straight, that's not to say that Seabiscuit wasn't a better horse. That's just saying that horse are animal, so it's hard to make that comparison. But the comparison that I make for the NBA and horse racing is that star. We long to see that star. We long to see the Triple Crown winner. We long to see the next Michael Jordan, or really anybody on the list.
We want to see the next
you know, best
people that you're like, oh man, Michael Jordan would have.
Michael Jordan would have
gotten
done this.
His butt handed to him by this guy.
Michael Jordan was the greatest scorer of all time, and there's nobody really who's going to do that ever again. We can have somebody who's great like LeBron James. We can have a LeBron James, and we can enjoy watching him, but keep Michael Jordan out of your mouth. We'll be on the other side. We got some NHL playoffs to talk about. We got some MLB to talk about. We'll also get into this NBA Finals. This is News Talk, AM 1230, WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to brucehallsports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Hey, we're back on the other side. We're going to get in some NBA Finals here and that Mr. LeBron James, who I won't even compare to Michael Jordan ever again. That is, unless...
You keep that out of your mouth.
You keep Michael Jordan out of your mouth.
Son.
All you Miami Heat fans and LeBron supporters... Keep the jump man out your mouth, all right? Unless it is that LeBron should get a contract wearing Michael Jordan's shoes. This is the only time he should ever be in the same sentence as Michael Jordan. So the NBA Finals has started with the Pacers going up 1-0. LeBron James had the triple-double in a loss. But he had a heck of a performance. He had 18 points, 18 boards, 10 assists. That's ridiculous. The big story to me is... Dwayne Wade not scoring. Dwayne Wade didn't score from the field. Chris Bosh has disappeared, seemingly, this series. And it's just, it's turning more into this Cleveland Cavaliers. I talked about this on a couple other different shows here in the past, and I've said that this Miami Heat team is more like the Cleveland Cavaliers team that LeBron was on that lost basically this Spurs team, except... a couple years younger, than more people like to admit. This team is not the big three. This isn't the greatest team of all time that so many people want it to be. It's just not that. Dwayne Wade's banged up. There's something wrong there. When the guy's not getting involved and he's not scoring from the field, there's something wrong. Chris Bosh hasn't been the banger that everyone expected him to be. And Birdman is a guy who people are saying that is that is going to be the biggest role in this NBA Finals. That Birdman was the reason why it went to Game 7 and was the reason why that they were able to keep pace with the Pacers. No pun intended there. But thank you, Matt. So, LeBron James had to go to 7 with the Indiana Pacers, who was a banger team. They had a very strong down low presence, and it took them 7 to get past them. And now here they are. Here is LeBron James with a triple double in a loss. Do you know who the last person to have a triple double in a loss in an NBA Finals was? I'll give you a hint. He did it in Game 1 of this series. LeBron James. He had a triple-double in a loss against the Dallas Mavericks, which we all know the Dallas Mavericks and Dirk Nowitzki beat that Miami Heat team. I believe that was 2 years ago now, 3 years, 2 years ago. Time flies. So the Dallas Mavericks, that was the last team to beat somebody who had a triple-double in a loss. The time before that, it was Jason Kidd. He had a triple-double in a loss. I believe it was in 2002. So it's been a while. When you get a triple double in a loss, it's been a very, very long time since anyone has ever gone on to win that
Nobody
series.
Nobody looks at you in the locker room after that and say, "Hey,
no,
man, I was doing so great you out see there. Me? I got a triple double.
Do you guys see me at triple double?
What were you guys doing out there?"
Well, time the history
Did
has.
Did you see that? Yeah, because you're behind me all the time.
History has showed that when one person controls the game, and you rely too much on one person, and he has a triple double and a loss in an NBA final series, that team goes on to lose the NBA finals. That's just history. That's fact, okay? That's not my opinion. I don't think that now, since LeBron James has a triple-double in Game 1, Tony Parker hits a bank shot. That's not, okay, that's not sealing the deal. They play a seven-game series for a reason, people, okay? So take a step back. You might recall last year when the Miami Heat lost Game 1 to the Oklahoma City Thunder, and then Miami woke up, had no problem with the Thunder moving forward, and ended up getting LeBron his first ever ring. So it is possible. The series is not over. But to me, the game-winning shot, I guess you can call it, in the 92-88 Spurs win over the Heat, the game-winning shot, or the shot that everyone's talking about, is the Tony Parker dribble around on one knee dribbling. He pump fakes 3 times, and he banks it in. Now, when you talk about the Spurs, you talk about a team who is fundamentally sound. They're your team. They're a team's team. They're old school. They have old players. They have role players. They have their stars. Duncan is probably going to go down as the greatest power forward to ever play the game. They have Tony Parker, who is a star. They have Manu Ginobili. All three of them could possibly be Hall of Famers. So they have their stars, but they're a team. They're one of the last old school basketball teams left in the NBA. And it's just fitting to me that their game-winning shot is a bank shot. It's a 2-point bank shot. To me, that couldn't be any sweeter. It's not a drive to the hole dunk. It's not the new age dunk. It's not the pullback fancy glamour play that you were talking about. It's not the fancy three. It's an ugly 3 pump fake bank shot that beats the Heat. And that's what's going to beat the Heat in this finals, is if the Spurs can play good, solid team defense and can play team basketball and can play good fundamental bank shot basketball, because the Heat aren't used to it. The Heat are not used to playing against teams who are fundamentally sound and aren't flashy. Everything's boring about the Spurs. There's nothing flashy about the Spurs. Even their uniforms are boring. They're silver and black, and they blend in and they mope. And they just look sad. The uniforms I'm talking about.
The uniforms actually
The uniforms mope. They mope to me. They don't even... Some of the uniforms don't even say Spurs. It's just a spur. It's just the U-looking spur. It's just... it's just... You know? That's why we're the new sports, the new flashy uniforms. You look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, and those uniforms are ridiculous. Okay, they're crazy. You look at the Heat uniforms; they have like seven different uniforms. They have all white uniforms, they have black uniforms, red uniforms, orange, Los Heat. They have every, you know, they have these crazy uniforms, and they're flashy, and they shoot off fireworks, and they promise seven world championships. And then you look at the Spurs, and it's a black uniform with a spur on it, and that's it. There's no fancy logo. There's no fancy logo. There's no fancy press conference. There's no fancy pep rally. It's just the Spurs, and they're here to beat the hell out of you.
That worries me about sports, though, now. And I have to take blame. It's my hometown team, the University of Maryland, that started this trend of really stupid-looking outfits being...
Well, Oregon did it, too. But, yes, yeah. Under Armour. Under Armour definitely plays into that. Well, Nike. Nike is Oregon, and they're crazy... Different, wearing a different uniform combination every game, and then Under Armour's doing it, you're right, with Maryland, which the Maryland uniforms, some of them are like, some of them I absolutely hate.
I loved the one that everybody was just like, what the heck are they doing?
I like the turtle shell helmets. Yes, I like the turtle shell helmets. That was cool too. Those are very cool.
But after that, now I think that's the start of a trend that's going to go really badly, I think.
Yeah.
Just people.
Well, the Jacksonville Jaguars have Arena League football uniforms. But that's my point, is sports are flashy now.
You used to look back at that and be like, oh, they're not real.
You even said it earlier. You said flashy. We don't have that flashy player. We need that flashy player.
I don't say we need a flashy player that's flashy because he has the talent to back it up. You look at someone like Chad Ochocinco, who sort of had the talent to to back it up
with his,
but
with
he was
his crazy,
super, he was super
his
flashy,
proposing to girlfriends or the cheerleaders and signing footballs, and T.O. did it too. They're very flamboyant.
Yeah, but
wide
we don't
receivers.
Care. We actually hate the people that are flashy that don't have the.
That
superhuman ability to back it up. Where you look at Michael Jordan, who's like almost superhuman.
And he was a trash talker. And he was an extreme competitor.
Never knew that back in the day.
But you didn't. That's because he was the greatest player ever.
I didn't know anything about that until I saw his acceptance speech.
See, I knew. If
like,
you followed Michael Jordan, you knew.
Who was that?
You
guy?
Knew he hated to lose at everything. The guy was a compulsive gambler because he hated losing. Not because he had a gambling problem. Maybe he did have a gambling problem here and there. But you know, hated losing. That's why he gambled. Not because he had a problem. He was addicted to it. Maybe he did. You know, maybe a counselor would say something different. But to me, it was he gambled because he obsessed on winning at everything. And if it hadn't been for an MLB lockout, we probably would have seen Michael Jordan end his career in a baseball uniform because he was obsessed with winning and obsessed with championships.
I remember that baseball foray, and I don't remember it going very well.
He was actually, if you talk to, what's his name, Tony Francoeur, he was the manager of the, I believe they were the Chicago Bay Sox, I believe is the minor league team they played for, and he said that if Michael Jordan had a couple more years in baseball, mind you, he only played one season. Okay, so he only had one season to show what he could do. But if he had a couple more seasons under his belt, Tony Francoeur said, who managed the Red Sox, broke the curse, won a World Series with him, he knows baseball, said that Michael Jordan would have been a pro. Now, would he have been an all-star? I don't know, but he would have been a pro. The guy was a competitor, and nobody told him no. That's why. And if it hadn't been for the MLB lockout, we never would have seen him come back. We never would have saw the next three championships, and we probably never would have had this conversation about him being the greatest basketball player ever. He would have been compared more to somebody like Bo Jackson, who could have been the greatest running back of all time, but instead he was just another guy who split his talent and his passion wasn't there, which is why I wrote an article, it was either last week or 2 weeks ago, saying that LeBron James is nothing but, to me, nothing but a waste of talent.
I think, you know, the next, when you say that, I think the next person, the next Michael Jordan will probably have to be someone who excels at two sports. That's the only way you can get by, and you can go so far above that, you know, the talent.
I hear
like,
what you're saying,
oh,
because LeBron, or because Michael Jordan was such a great basketball player, and he was so good at that one sport that in order for him,
and basketball hasn't changed.
In order for someone to possibly
be
better than Michael Jordan,
I'm the best basketball player. I won six championships, and I won the Olympics in juggling.
Well, Deion Sanders played in a Super Bowl and a World Series. You don't hear his name very much.
Yeah, he's all over TV, but I mean, he wasn't the best at this and the best at that. Right. He was on teams that did that and teams.
I hear what you're saying. But back to the Spurs series, because that's where this all started. Somehow we circulated.
We're just chilling. We don't have anybody yelling at us.
That's all right. We have no yell.
Yeah.
We have no yell. Roy's in control.
It's the sports hangout.
But Tony Parker had the shot, and it was banked. And I love that. To me, that's poetic Spurs basketball. And if they're going to win the series again, it's going to be through bank shots and defense, and it's going to be through boring basketball that the media hates to write about because it's boring. It's under 90 points scoring, and it's boring. But LeBron James did have a triple-double, 18 points, 18 rebounds, 10 assists, which puts him tied for third all-time with Larry Bird and Rajon Rondo, pretty good company there, in the most triple-doubles in postseason history. The only two people ahead of him are Jason Kidd with 11, so LeBron James could pass Mr. Jason Kidd. He only needs one to tie, two to pass, but there's no passing the guy who has the number one in triple-doubles in most postseasons, that being a Mr. Magic Johnson. So, on the other side, I'll break down this NBA Finals, and we'll get into the NHL Finals as promised. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. Boston Bruins and the Chicago Blackhawks are in the NHL Finals. I'll talk about that at length, next segment here on News Talk 1230 WFAS. It would be well earned. We were made in his
image, then call us by. Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back. Well, I'm back here. You're at News Talk, AM 1230, WFAS.
I got it.
Bruce Hall,
I know how
opinion.
LeBron can be better than Jordan.
No.
He joins DC United.
I don't want to hear any of that.
He wins the the MLS championship with DC United. then nobody everybody would. Like, oh, you know, I bet you Jordan would have been better if he would have played soccer.
Nobody would care.
Everybody would just be comparing Jordan
DC
to
United
LeBron.
Soccer. You got to be kidding me, man.
Yes. LeBron.
So, this NBA Finals.
They're trying to get a team in Miami now. He could play on it.
Nobody cares.
He would be awesome.
LeBron James has three triple-doubles now in the finals. The most all-time is Magic with eight, so he's second place in that. The last triple-double in the finals, as I talked about, was the loss to the Mavs in Game 5 2 years ago. LeBron James did it. The Miami Heat went on to lose that series to the Mavericks. And the dream team that promised seven world championships was undone. So, now, this Miami Heat team, game two tonight at 8 o'clock against the San Antonio Spurs. The last game that we had was Thursday night, so they've had a little bit of rest, which to me, that is plus one in the Spurs category. If you get rest for an old team like this, that says Spurs all the way. Parker led all scorers in Game 1 with 21. Duncan had 14 boards. Parker, 6 assists. James is the only person who shows up in the Miami category. 18 points, 18 rebounds, 10 assists. Again, Dwayne Wade, the no-show. Very odd no-show in Game 1. We had Dwayne Wade. Oh, I'm sorry, he had 17 points. I don't know why I thought he had 0 points. But maybe that was in a quarter or so. I apologize for that. Chris Bosh had 13 points. Dwayne Wade had 17. LeBron James had 18. So he did score. I saw the stat line wrong. But still, he's not putting in the work that we expect the Dwayne Wade to have. Tim Duncan, 20 points. Danny Green, 12 points. Tony Parker, 21 points. Manu Ginobili, 13 points. So they're scoring all across the board. Leonard did a decent job of checking LeBron James. I mean, when LeBron doesn't go off for 32, then you're playing a little bit of defense there. So good work for Leonard. Man, I can't believe Dwayne Wade had 17 points. And the stat line that I saw said he had 0. So my apologies for not doing my complete research on that one. But this Spurs team, nonetheless.
How dare you?
How dare I? See, now I feel like a jerk. But that's all right. Anyways, the Spurs team going forward, again, Oklahoma City won Game 1. They went on to lose. granted, that was in Oklahoma City. This game one loss is at home. This is a Miami Heat team that lost at home to the Spurs. The boring Spurs beat them. To me, the big three for the Spurs, not necessarily the Miami Heat. It's whichever big three to me shows up. And right now, the big three for the Spurs are showing up. And they're the ones who are playing basketball, and they're the ones who are playing good team basketball. The Miami Heat, their big three is not showing up. Dwayne Wade had 17 points. I thought he had zero. That's how little impact Dwayne Wade had on that game. Chris Bosh, 13 points. Didn't really show up. He hasn't been the Chris Bosh that we've all expected him to be in this playoff run, really. Dwayne Wade has looked hurt, so he hasn't been the guy either. It's been the LeBron James show, and everyone's saying that he's been taking control just like he did in Cleveland, and we all know what happened when he was in Cleveland. He lost this Spurs team. So if I had to pick a winner today, right now, and I guess I do have to pick a winner right now, today, for the whole series, it's going to be the Spurs. I think the Spurs take it in six. I don't even think this gets to a game seven. I think the Spurs take it, and it's because of this format, the 2-3-2 NBA Finals format. We get two games in Miami. Okay, they've split. Then you get three games in San Antonio. Okay, let's say Miami gets one. Let's say they get one of those three. Okay, now it's 3-2 if they split in Miami. It's 3-2 and we're back in Miami. San Antonio then has two shots to take one game in Miami. That's why people hate this system, this 2-3-2 system. It's supposed to favor the team with the best record. It's supposed to favor the Miami Heat. But four home games, spread out 2-2, give me the three and a split. What happens to the NBA Finals if the Spurs sweep at home after getting a split in Miami and the Spurs bounce the Heat 4-1? Then do you think the NBA changes their 2-3-2? I think they have to. Because this 2-3-2 setup is ridiculous. You have to go back to the 2-2-1-1-1. I know it's hard on the traveling and it's hard on the media to get there. And if that's your issue, NBA, then put the main guys that you want covering the games, put them on the team with the planes. Or get them a private jet or something. You have enough money to do it, so make it happen. Because this 2-3-2, if the Heat do get bounced early and they get swept in San Antonio and they go out 4-1, you're going to have a whole mess on your hands, and you're going to have to deal with a lot coming out of the media, and you're going to have to deal with basketball losing its marquee team and the best player in the world since Michael Jordan has been bounced out of the postseason again by the San Antonio Spurs, who did it to him the first time. So I don't think the 2-3-2 is good for basketball, and now the Heat are in some serious trouble against the Spurs here. But there also is another sport going on right now, and that's the NHL. The NHL postseason is right now is the Blackhawks, after they move on, beating the yes, Matt.
This is June.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, it is June.
Why are we still doing hockey?
Well, why are we still doing baseball? Or basketball, I mean. It's a winter sport. They start around the same time.
Not on ice. You don't do basketball on ice. That would be awesome, but you don't do basketball on ice.
I mean, this is it, though. This is
very energy inefficient. I'm a registered energy auditor to keep that ice in June.
Oh, yeah.
You're so inefficient.
Oh, my gosh. God forbid, right?
Yeah, I know, man.
Who cares?
Sorry, I'm just...
I mean, this is a shortened season and everything.
I know.
I
don't want to hear about it anymore. I didn't.
You don't
want to
hear about the NHL finals. You don't want to hear about the NHL Stanley Cup.
I don't. I know you have to talk about it.
Come
but
on,
like,
man.
When is it going to end?
After this 7-game series, that's when it'll end, Matt.
Man, it's June. It's June, man.
Nobody's whining and complaining about the NBA finals just starting out, and they're spreading their team. They're spreading their games out Thursday to Sunday.
You can play that out on a basketball court in the sun. That's fine. You can't do that out with hockey.
So you can't play outside hockey games. You can't do that.
Not in June.
Well, have you ever heard of the Winter Classic?
Yes, that's outdoors. They play outside. That's great. And you know what the key word in that was? Winter.
Basketball's a winter game. Hockey's a winter game.
Yeah, so when it gets sunny and you go to any basketball court in any state, anywhere, mm-hmm. they're not playing.
No.
You don't see people just, you know.
Hockey's played year-round.
You see
round,
that, man, I can't play it because it's not winter.
Hockey's played year-round. Granted, it might not indoor. All be on ice, but it's an indoor game. You can put up ice anywhere.
Yeah, but it's energy.
And you play outdoors, too, with the roller hockey. There's professional roller hockey leagues out there where NHL players played during the lockout. They played roller hockey. There are guys who play for – one guy that I know who plays for the Washington Capitals came from a roller hockey league. So hockey's played year-round. Just ask any Canadian if it's played year-round.
But the Marquee League, which is – winter sports, not in June.
The NBA,
tired of hearing about
the NBA marquee is a winter sport. You don't hear. There's the D League. That's the summer. I mean, there's summer basketball.
But the key
leagues.
Part of basketball is not ice.
It doesn't matter. It's a winter league. It's
it
a winter sport.
Awesome,
it's a
though,
winter sport.
If we got basketball on ice,
no, that'd be awful.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be terrible. That'd be like when they mixed basketball on trampolines and they tried to make that work. What was that called?
I don't know, but it sounds awesome.
It was terrible. It was awful. I watched it for like 5 minutes, and I was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. I forget what it was called. It's called like Rumble Ball or something, like Thunderball.
Let me guess. Was Vince McMahon
probably
part of that?
Yeah, it was like XFL and Rumble Ball. It was ridiculous. It was stupid. But the Blackhawks struggled with the Leafs. They went to Game 7 with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Okay, this Blackhawks team scored a point in the first 24 games of the NHL season. This was a heck of a team, a heck of a streak going forward. Okay, this Chicago team was ridiculous. I'm sorry, the Bruins went to 7. The Blackhawks just struggled with gosh, who did the Blackhawks? I got it. But the Bruins struggled.
You're just jammed to the music now. That's what
I am.
It is.
You play some.
Like, oh,
you play
this
some,
is my jam.
You play some Wu-Tang, and I perk up, and I and that's it. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I'll get into the NHL on the other side, because now I got Wu-Tang. I got, and I'm, see, this is why it's good to not have Bruce here, because if this came on with Bruce, he'd
we'd
throw
hear
a
some
fit.
Really bad stuff during the break that.
I lost
we
my
wouldn't
place.
Be able to mention
I lost my place completely when this song came on. I was like, wait, what am I talking about? I don't even know what I'm talking about.
I know what
about.
You're talking about.
For the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you. Protect homeownership. On the other side, I'll get straight, and as long as there's no Wu-Tang on, I'll read off some stats that are correct. Here on News Talk 1230 WFAS, we'll be right back. My life got no better. Same damn low sweater. Times is rough
and tough like leather. Figured out I was. We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
So before Wu-Tang, I was making a point. And before I lost my place, the Chicago Blackhawks were on the brink of elimination with the Detroit Red Wings. They won game one, and then they lost three straight, and everyone was counting them out. And I was on this show a couple weeks ago, and I said, how dare you bet against the Chicago Blackhawks? If you really thought that they were going to go down that easy, how dare you? Then they came back, of course, won the series. Then they went on, and they snapped the longest NHL home postseason win streak as they beat the LA Kings, and they won that series 4-1. The Bruins are the ones who had a hard time with the Maple Leafs, the Toronto Maple Leafs. They went to Game 7. Then the Bruins went on, and they played the Pittsburgh Penguins, the number one offense in the NHL. Handled them. Swept them. Swept Sidney Crosby. Sidney Crosby didn't even score. Didn't score a point. Moved on. They shut down the best offensive team in hockey, and now they find each other playing Game 1 of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals this Wednesday. Now, a couple reasons why these teams are here is goaltending. Okay, Chicago, their goalkeeper Crawford, he has a 1.74 goal against this postseason, and Rask for the Bruins leads all the postseason with a 994 save percentage. 94%, that's ridiculous. So, two very good goalkeepers. Two very good offensive defensive teams are also playing in the Stanley Cup Finals. Boston, their top two guys are the points leaders through the whole postseason. And they have the number one goal leader. The Bruins also have the top two. They're tied for the second most goals in this postseason. And Bickle and Sharp both have 8. So two very good offensive teams this postseason are playing in the Stanley Cup. So not only do we have two of the best goaltenders, but we have two of the best offensive teams. And to add it all into the mix, the Chicago Blackhawks are the top defensive team this postseason, allowing 2.0 goals per game. And Boston was the third best defensive team, 2.2 goals per game. And Chicago was the second best offense in the regular season. Boston was the 13th best offensive team in the regular season. So they've been, both of these teams have been doing it all year. As I mentioned last segment, before Wu-Tang came on and so rudely interrupted me, then I had to rock out for a second. Chicago started the season out with 24 straight points. One of the biggest streaks this NHL season, as the Pittsburgh Penguins put together one of the longest win streaks in NHL history. So there was the shortened season. This Blackhawks team that started out on fire, they had some bumps that they had to get through in the NHL playoffs. But they found themselves here in the Stanley Cup against the Boston Bruins, the number 4 seed out of the East, who a lot of people counted out. But they get a hot goalie, get a hot offense, and they're limiting people to just about 2 goals per game. This is going to be a heck of a matchup. This is going to be a heck of a Stanley Cup. And to me, both teams offensively sound. Both teams have great goalkeepers. Both teams are playing great defensive hockey. To me, it's going to be all about the special teams. It's all going to be about who commits the most penalties and who has the best power play or power kill. That's who's going to win this NHL Stanley Cup. It's going to come down to special teams. It's going to come down to time in box. It's going to come down to power play. It's going to come down to power kill. Because both of these teams have been playing phenomenal. Both these teams have come back when teams said that they couldn't do it, or they said that they were up against an impossible matchup. The Bruins beat the Penguins, which nobody said that they were going to win that series, let alone sweep the Penguins. Everyone was counting Chicago out when they were down and on the verge of elimination against the Red Wings. Everyone was counting them out then, and then they did it. They came back and they won that series, and then they beat the defending champion LA Kings 4-1. And ended their 15-game home NHL winning streak. So to me, it's two very great, it's very good, great, if not great, hockey teams here in the Stanley Cup. I like this Stanley Cup Finals better than I like the matchup in the NBA Finals. Yeah, we have the Miami Heat and you have the Spurs. You know, two of the biggest stars in this current era. You have LeBron James and you have Tim Duncan. And Tim Duncan, this could be his last final push for, you know, cementing himself as the best power forward ever. Great matchup. But the matchup that we have in this NHL Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals, is ridiculous. One of the better teams in recent years in this Blackhawks team, like I said, started out 24 straight points. And then you have this Boston Bruins team who everyone has to love. This Boston Bruins team, they're the underdog story. There was the Boston bombing, so that whole city has bonded around this team. I don't know if you haven't seen the video of the guy who is singing the national anthem at the Boston Bruins game and stops, and then the whole crowd overtakes him and sings the national anthem during that game. If you haven't seen that video, YouTube it, because it is a great video. Or you go to sportsmancave.com because I have it up there. It's a great video. And the city has rallied behind, since that, the city has rallied behind the Bruins. The Bruins have been on a hot streak, and they carried that hot streak through the NHL playoffs. They had a little bit of a bump, but then they swept the Pittsburgh Penguins, who a lot of people said was going to be the odds-on favorite to win the Stanley Cup. Oh, by the way, they also beat the New York Rangers, who opened up as Stanley Cup Finals to begin the season. So they went through. It's not like they took the easy routes. These guys went through top teams, and now they find themselves the underdog story here in the NHL Stanley Cup Finals against the Chicago Blackhawks, one of the best teams this year and one of the best teams that we've seen in recent years. So, if you're going to ride the underdog story, why not take the Boston Bruins? Now, it's Sunday, so we have to get into our MLB picks. Oh, by the way, if you're going to take the NHL, yeah, I like the Bruins. But this MLB Sunday, we always do our picks. Bruce said that he wanted me to read off his picks, but I don't have that email up, Bruce, so sorry. If you like Bruce's picks, you're going to have to go to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion or BruceHallSports.com and read his picks there. First game, we have the Texas Rangers playing the Toronto Blue Jays, Grimm and Johnson, Joe Johnson for the Toronto. I like Texas. Texas has the best pitching staff in baseball going right now. Toronto has struggled, even though it's in Canada. Take the Rangers. Cleveland, Detroit. There's way too much going on in Cleveland right now, as we talked about. There's way too many distractions. They've been on a slide. Take Detroit, no matter who's pitching. It's Alvarez, but take Detroit. They're a hot team right now. The Mets and Miami. This team, these two teams went to 20 innings last night. They played 20 innings where the Miami Marlins won 2-1. So there, you got to think about the bullpens. You got to think about, you know, pitching staffs. People are tired, and you get a good game after that. So you're going with the best team, and that's clearly the New York Mets. This Miami team is the worst team in baseball. So the Mets, give me the Mets all day. Red Sox, LA Angels. Dempster, who I hate to bet on, and Blanton for the Angels. The Angels suck. Give me the Red Sox. Nationals and the Twins. Diamond for the Twins and Zimmerman going for the Washington Nationals. Zimmerman easily has been the ace for the Washington Nationals. The Washington Nationals have been on a slide. They're trying to turn things around. Give me the Nationals at home against the Twins in game one. Game two, Carnes. Carnes is a new guy that they pulled up. He's been filling the spot of an injured Ross Detweiler. Also, Steven Strasburg has been injured, so they've been a lot of pitching moves around the Washington Nationals. He's 0-1 with a 6.0 ERA. But still, they're at home. Give me the Nationals in both games today. Tampa Bay. Moore against Tillman and the Baltimore Orioles. It's in Tampa Bay. It's a little T-ball park. Give me the Baltimore Orioles as they lead the all of baseball in home runs. Baltimore Orioles wins that, and they get at least two home runs in the day. Kansas City Royals against the Houston Astros. Houston's terrible. It doesn't matter who's pitching for the Royals. Royals win. Chicago White Sox against the Oakland Athletics. I love this Athletics team. This Chicago White Sox team has done nothing for me. If Adam Dunn plays today, which I'm pretty sure he's playing, that means they have a cancer on the team in that batting lineup. So give me the A's. Phillies and the Brewers. There's way too many distractions around this Brewers team right now. Ryan Braun looks like he's probably going to be suspended after these new cases that have come up against all of the PEDs that came out of that doping clinic in Miami. Phillies have found somewhat of a hot streak there. Pettibone is pitching for them. He's 3-1 with 3.4 ERA. Loesch is pitching for the Brewers. He's 1-6 with a 4.39. So give me the Phils. As much as I hate it, give me the Phils. Chicago Cubs and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Locke and Edwin Jackson. Edwin Jackson is 1-8 with a 6.29 ERA. The guy cannot buy a win right now. The Pirates are hot. They're playing in the best division in all of baseball. Give me the Pirates. Next, the Dodgers take on the Braves. No pitcher announced yet for the Dodgers. Miner's pitching for the Braves. It doesn't matter who's pitching for the Dodgers because the Braves right now are either the best or one of the best teams in baseball. Give me the Braves, even on the road in LA, because Magic Johnson's not playing for the Dodgers, so it doesn't matter. The Yankees in Seattle. Phelps is pitching for the Yanks. Felix Hernandez, K-Rod is pitching for Seattle. That's going to be a heck of a matchup. Hernandez is 7-4 with a 2.58 ERA. Give me K-Rod. I really like him going forward. I like any time he pitches. I'll take the better pitcher there, and that's K-Rod. Rockies, San Diego. Rockies are hitting the ball. Padres aren't. Give me the Rockies. San Francisco and Arizona. San Francisco's pitching staff right now, it's getting better, but it's not all there, and it's not one of their big names throwing. He's 1-1 with a 2.1 ERA. Doesn't matter. I like Arizona in a matchup of nobodies. Cincinnati Reds and the best team in baseball, the St. Louis Cardinals. Lynn and Arroyo. Doesn't matter. He gets the loss as St. Louis Cardinals beat up on the Reds. Now, I mentioned that the best conference division in baseball is the NL Central. I think it honestly is. You have the St. Louis Cardinals. They have the second best batting average in the whole league with a 275 batting average. You have the Cincinnati Reds, who are batting 253 as a team. That's 15th best. And you have Pitt, who's batting 27th best with a 235. So that means that there's only three teams that are worse than them in the league, yet they have such a good record. And the teams with the worst batting average than the Pirates are the Nationals, Mets, and Marlins, all from the NL East, which historically has been one of the better divisions. They're down. So, then you look at ERA. St. Louis Cardinals, as I talked about, has the second-best ERA. The fourth-best ERA belongs to Cincinnati Reds, and the third-best ERA belongs to the Pittsburgh Pirates. So, they're all pitching great. They're all pitching phenomenal, top of the league. St. Louis Cardinals, second best fielding percentage. Cincinnati, eighth best fielding percentage. Pittsburgh, a little bit lower with 21 best fielding percentage. So to me, these teams are not pretenders. The Pirates have a little bit of issues with the bat and in fielding, but they're pitching great. All these teams are looking great. They're middle of the pack in home runs, which means they're hitting the ball strong. They're not throwing it out of the park like the Yankees, Orioles, and Boston are. So that's the show. Hope you liked it. Hope this was the Roy takeover that everyone expected. And Bruce will be back next week. I hope he won all his games. So signing off for News Talk 1230 WFAS. It's Roy G. Thanks for hanging out.